둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sounds and the Consequence Podcast Network. Hopefully you're a subscriber to the series. Interviews are put out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And of course, we've got them compiled at Consequence of Sound and WFPK.org. So hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now, wherever you get your favorite podcast from, including iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Also YouTube. You can subscribe there as well. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, the band Hatchie. I'll be talking with Harriet Pilbeam about her debut record. It's called Keepsake. This comes after a really explosive 2018 that she had with the debut EP and all the critical acclaim. And we'll talk about that, what excitement led in to this brand new record, how it affected her sound. And speaking of that sound, it's been talked about a lot, whether you call it dream pop or shoegaze or just pop. Or just gaze, I suppose. We'll get into what makes this record sound the way it does. And we get the stories behind some of my favorite tracks, like Unwanted Guest and the big single Obsessed, working with producer John Castle. And there's a fun story about how she went to college, you know, and got degrees in entertainment and management, which she says is pretty much useless, which, yeah, we've heard that story before. But as you'll hear, we're going to start with a little television show called Love Island. It's Kyle Meredith with Hatchie.
Hi, how's it going?
I got to tell you, I mean, Keepsake has been one of the what do you call it, a breath of fresh air this year. It's such a great record. And I know we have lots to jump in on there. I almost thought maybe we should just talk about Love Island, considering what you've been writing about on Twitter.
Oh, my goodness.
I've never seen the show. I don't know what it is, but the way you talk about it, I kind of have a feeling what it is, and I'm a bit interested now, just the way you sell it.
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah, there's a UK season, which is like the original one, but there's a US one at the moment, which is really funny as well, because they've never done it in America with Americans before. And I feel like they just don't quite understand how it works. So they're really funny in the way they react to things and how seriously they're taking things. And it's so, I can't put into words how funny it is. Like, I don't know. It's just really, it's, you know, it's just one of those moments, I think, when it's like really enjoyable to watch something because you know how many other people you know are watching it. So like every time I tweet, I have friends who message me and they're like, oh my God, I saw that too. It's so stupid. Like, it's just so funny. It's ridiculous. It's one of the only reality shows I watch. Like, I've never gotten into The Bachelor or anything like that. This is my one.
Yeah, so, this is it.
Very fun. Yeah.
So this is what you're doing with your month off in between. This is
exactly
how you turn off.
Yes, it's perfect timing.
Well, good on you. Maybe I'll peek in, but maybe I won't because yeah. I don't know that I have time to get sucked into something like that. And that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it does. It takes so much time. There's an episode almost every day. So
wow.
It really takes up a lot of your time. It's a commitment.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're looking for any kind of concept record to write about, you know, you could do the Love Island
yeah.
record. So there it is.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
Well, let's get into Keepsake then. Actually, going into it, so as the story is told, you know, you put out the first few singles that ends up with last year's EP, and the critical acclaim seemed to have hit so quickly for you. You had momentum going into this record. Was there a sense of excitement? Could you feel that?
Yeah, definitely. I think especially with the internet and being, you know, so in, you know, contact with people constantly, if I want to be, you know, as soon as I just need to pick up my phone to see people commenting on my photos or tweeting me or anything, you know, telling me they can't wait for the album. There was definitely a sense of that as it was happening. But I think it was pretty good in that it wasn't too much of like a pressure for me to do anything in particular. I just could tell that there were people who were excited. So it was really good. It was really positive.
I thought, you know, even before your first record was out, you've already worked. I know it wasn't a deep relationship, but you've already worked with a Cocteau Twin. So
yeah, totally.
Getting really started really quickly, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And that definitely grabbed the attention of certain people who were expecting a certain type of music after that. So that was definitely a bit scary and something I was thinking about.
And so much attention has been paid to the sound of this record. Do you ever feel like the songs get nudged aside a bit because of that?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know. That's something that I have wondered about. I haven't really gotten to it. I don't really have an answer, but it's definitely something I've noticed. I think that certain people pay attention to the writing of the songs, and those are the people who call it pop, and those are the people who, yeah, really categorize it as a pop record, which is fine. And then the people who really pay attention to the sound are the ones who categorize it as a different type, whether it's dream pop or, you know, shoegaze sensibilities or whatever else people want to call it. I think, yeah, there is definitely, there are different people who listen to it in different ways, which has been really interesting. I don't know if it's, I would see it in a negative way as it's, you know, gotten in the way of, you know, people paying attention to the songs. But yeah, there's certainly a difference in people's reaction.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to kind of read all of that, and especially, you know, of course, I'm coming at it where I'm reading it all at once, you know, and this is one block as we go into something like this. So it's it feels like there's a narrative out there that goes along with it. With the songs, and I do want to bring up a few of those songs, I've fallen in love with, of course, we've been playing Obsessed around here quite a lot at WFBK. Mm-hmm. I fall in love with Unwanted Guest, I think, personally speaking.
Oh, yeah.
And the beginning, it's almost like whatever you're saying is like purposefully obscured. Did you do that on purpose, or is that just the way I'm hearing it?
Yeah, like I wanted this one to be pretty vague, I think. I think that's probably my favorite art song, if I had to pick one as well, or it was my long-standing favorite in the demo process. Yeah, I kind of just wanted it to be, yeah, a bit, you know, with those affected vocals in the middle and in the beginning, sorry, and everything. Just, yeah, a bit more vague, you know. I feel like all my songs are so literal and they're all either, you know, saying exactly how I feel or a story of exactly what happened. And yeah, I don't know. I kind of just wanted this one to be a bit more obscure in the sense of the lyric.
That also kind of plays into the artwork too, because there's a bit of obscuring and vagueness when you get to the artwork.
Yeah, totally. That was something I was definitely intent on. I didn't want it to just be like a portrait of me, or, you know, like how the EP was. I didn't want it to just be like a photo of my face or something. I wanted it to be something a bit more, I guess, mysterious than that. So yeah, that's what we landed on.
It's just interesting how that all worked together, because as a complete presentation, it does feel like there's a picture being drawn both in the music and with, you know, the way you're presented on the cover.
Yeah, totally. Thanks.
Obsessed in itself, you know, I brought that one up a minute ago. I had read that you sort of wrote that purposefully to be simple, like you wanted a very simple song.
Yeah, I was in the middle of, I've been demoing and writing the record over a few years, but the actual process of going into the studio and doing the final recording sessions took place over the second half of last year. I did a two-week session in July and a two-week session in December, I think. And in between those two sessions, I had most of the songs written, but I was feeling like it was getting really serious and really, like, not even dark at all, too like melancholy or something. And I just just felt like all my songs were kind of going in the same direction and sounding the same. So I just sat down one afternoon and just wanted to write, like you said, just a super simple pop song and something that didn't, sound like it was trying too hard, I guess, because that's how I was kind of feeling that day about all the music I was writing. So yeah, I just wrote that song really quick. And I think that if you can kind of tell that, and that's fine, like I'm not going to pretend there's some huge deeper meaning to it, or, you know, it took me, you know, weeks slaving away. It was really just written in an afternoon for fun, and it was really fun. And now it's like one of the most fun songs to perform live. So that's what I wanted. And yeah, I think it ends up, you know, just how I expected it.
It sometimes sounds like you go into a song, a writing as a challenge or an exercise. Some people sit down, you know, with a guitar or whatever, and they just kind of wait for it to come to you, you know, the artist or whatever. But do you do that often? Do you go into a song like, well, I want to try this, or I want to get to this point, or maybe we do this and see what happens?
Mm-hmm. Not very often. It's something that I kind of started doing in the second half of last year, because I felt like there were some gaps that could be filled with kind of like, you know, because I was kind of like envisioning the album as like a patchwork, and I felt like, you know, the scale was kind of tipping in one direction. I needed to like kind of patch it up and, you know, make some songs that connected other songs together. So for a few songs like that one, yeah, that's what I did. I sat down with kind of an idea in mind, but most of the time it is just whatever comes to me and it's not planned.
That's an interesting talent though. I mean, have you ever considered writing for others, you know, giving songs away to other people?
Yeah, I definitely have. It's something I really want to get into. It was something I was kind of holding off on until the first record was out, but it's something that I've thought about a lot, and that's actually was kind of the idea when I was working on Stay With Me with my partner Joe. He wrote most of that song already, and he brought it to me, and we helped write it and helped finish the demo together with the idea in mind that it was going to be for someone other than Hatchy. And after that, it was kind of, you know, such a fun writing session that I thought that I could definitely do this for other people more. Yeah, I think it makes it a bit more relaxed and there's kind of less pressure, and doesn't have to be about something so personal or something so true to yourself. Yeah, if you do it that way.
Yeah, just we've been listening and playing a lot of the new Prince record with originals, which of course is all of that. It's all the songs that he wrote for other people, and it's a hell of a talent.
Yes. Uh-huh. It's so incredible. It's so impressive.
I guess that's a bar for anyone right there, a bar set, you know. when you're writing for
totally,
others.
Totally, that's the dream.
Like, those are the throwaway songs right there. Yeah, sure.
That's so funny. Yeah, that's such a funny way to look at it. Like, imagine if those are the songs you give away.
Right. you kind of mentioned, you know, how a song translates live and everything. I think I read on, it was probably Twitter or something, you were talking about having to go back, you know, to get a song ready to play live, and you heard the vocals on Sleep, and it was, mm-hmm. See, this is why artists don't go back and listen to themselves after it's done.
It's so bad. I never do it. I try to avoid it as much as I can, because there's always going to be things I'll be like, why did I do that? Or why didn't we do that thing? Or keep that thing in that someone told me to take out? Or whatever. Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, the thing with that one in particular, it was like, all it was just like my voice. I just sound so young, and I remember almost redoing those vocals at the time, and I was like, maybe I can do them with a bit more like energy. It just had no energy, and then I was like, it'll be fine, no one will hear it. And I genuinely was just like, it was just such so casual. And now I'm like, you know, it's not like billions of people are hearing it or anything, but I'm still like, it's just for myself. I really could have redone those vocals. So it's a lesson learned.
Now, have you found that, you know, all these songs are easy to play live, or are there some that's just more difficult than others?
there's definitely a few that have been a bit difficult to get off the ground just because we used, for example, like an old analog synth with a sound that we can't recreate on, you know, with MIDI or anything else that we've got. So it's really just been a matter of figuring out how to recreate sounds on the gear that we have without just spending $1 million on, you know, getting all the right tracking and everything, like samples for that. So it's been kind of a balancing act of figuring out what we need to sample and what we can recreate live.
Did you play everything on here? I mean, as I'm looking at the credits, you know, it doesn't kind of list it. Is this you on every instrument?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I can't play drums to save my life. So my producer, John Castle, did all the drums, but all of it's done by me, John Castle, and my partner, Joe.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how much of a collaborator was John Castle as the producer?
Most of the songs, I had the demos pretty much done and all the production decisions made before we headed to the studio. But there were a few that he had a really big hand in, like Secret, because I had all those parts written, but it wasn't really, production-wise, I had no idea what to do with it. It wasn't anything special. So he really helped make that what it was. And also Joe helped me during the demoing process, kind of figuring out the sound for a lot of them along the way.
You know, reading that you had studied entertainment and management in college, and most of the time when people do that, that it ends up being pretty useless. But I, you know, as we talk about how all of this has sort of pushed ahead, seemingly maybe quicker than a lot of artists could have pulled off, have you found that that's been helpful? Have you been able to use what you learned there?
Look, to be honest, I think it's still been pretty useless for me. But that's, I think, if I, you know, to be completely honest, but I think it's because I was also just already in other bands before I did that degree. I just kind of was really lost and didn't know what I wanted to study because the only thing I really wanted to do was be an artist. So I was like, well, I may as well, you know, I didn't want to study performing because I felt like that was too close and that would kind of make me hate it because I think studying performing in high school really pushed me away from it. So I was like, well, what can I do that's kind of close to it that kind of, you know, will help me a little bit but isn't studying exactly what I want to do? And that was kind of the next closest thing I thought of. But yeah, I kind of already knew, I guess, a lot of the basic things that I could have learned from that degree just from being in a band, but right. It definitely helped in some ways.
Yeah, I remember trying to read a book about how to be a manager while I was in a band, like, you know, 20 years ago or something like that, and sort of having that same thing, like, when I got finished with it, like, well, there's that. I'm not sure I can do anything with that.
Totally. It's a bit like that. And I also think it's such an industry where you can't really learn what you need to do from a degree or a book. It's so much about other things. Like, you know, all the best managers in the world, I'm sure, followed completely different blueprints. And there's not one way to do anything. You know, we were taught weird things like, you know, there's this type of manager and there's two types of record deals. And it was all very black and white and structured. And I don't think it's like that at all. Yeah.
as far as those bands go, Baba Ganoush, is that the name of the band? Are you still in that?
Yeah, we haven't like broken up and I haven't been replaced or anything, but we just haven't played anything in like 2 years partly because of Hatchie, but also because, you know, the other members have gone back to university or, you know, gotten full-time jobs and joined other bands and stuff. So we're not doing anything at the moment, but yeah, I don't know.
Still exists. That's what I was wondering, you know, how it fits into your life once all this is happening, if at all. I mean, this is when things fade away.
I know. Yeah, totally. No, we played like a really casual gig about a year ago and haven't had a rehearsal since then, but they've been recording while I've been away. But yeah, that's the latest news on that. There isn't much news at all.
You know, for whatever that is, I'm so happy that you're doing Hatchie because Keepsake is such a great record. It's such a fantastic record and I can't compliment it enough.
Oh, thank you so much.
No problem. And Harriet, that's it. Thank you so much for talking to me. I will release you back to your morning and then what? You're going to be back in the States for another tour this fall?
Yes, that's it. Those are the next shows we have. I'm super excited.
All right. Well, we'll catch you back when you're over here.
Thank you. Have a nice evening.
All right. You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Big thanks to Harriet Pilbeam. The band Hatchie and its debut record, Keepsake, is out now. Don't forget, before you get out of here, to hit that subscribe button if you're not already a subscriber to the series. Anywhere you get your favorite podcasts from, that's iTunes and Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also subscribe on YouTube and give us a comment. Leave a comment about this episode or the whole series and a rating as well if you can do that. After that, head to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. You'll hear brand new songs, anniversary celebrations, music news, clips from these interviews as well. It's also bonus interviews at WFPK.org. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith and Facebook/Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.